the main source of hatred in the world is religion. And organized religion.
These Christian apologists are full of intolerance and expecting us to swallow it, but I'm not allowing this. First, they claim this is a Christian nation and then proceed to try to merge their little doctrine into biased legislation. Like we should give a damn about the God they praise or their book of contradictions written back in the days. Some mythological, hypocritical bullshit that tends to distort shit. And then you wonder why we all ignore this. You're atheists to each and every other type of God. For all you know, the one you worship could be a fraud.
You are listening to the Skeptic Hour. It is September 11th, 2011. This is our first show back since April 3rd, 2011. We've been on break. Today, our guest on the show will be Rich Indiana Joy Lyons. Our topic will be building atheist communities. If you'd like to call in, our number is 888-815-9756. Please remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and by searching the Skeptic Hour. Hey, Landon, you going to help me here? You know I'm over here dying.
Oh, okay. No, I was looking at our schedule. I actually wanted to ask you, since you were on the break, like what was going on during your break? Well, the show's been down.
Right now, I'm dealing with this code, but while I was on break, I remember we had parted ways after that last show, after you had that religious experience.
Yeah. Oh, man. You mean to tell me you have another podcast with some other host? Because I know you wasn't.
No, it was you. It was you. We haven't spoke all summer long. Yesterday was the first time we patched it up.
Well, you know, I had to shave all my hair off and join that cult out in Dakota. We worship grapefruit. Hey, a real riveting experience.
I mean, I guess everybody expected us to do a 9/11 show, but this won't be a 9/11 show. But I do notice a lot of truthers in my Facebook feed. I've been getting those all every week. It's truther week. every year around 9/11.
You know what that's about. You know, every year, you know, around the time when that tragedy took place, you got all the people that swear they know that it was a conspiracy. You know how that goes. You know. And the funny thing is, every time, like in my experience with it, every single time I ask them to, you know, just could you give me a little bit of evidence to back up your claim? Usually they don't have any evidence to give me, or they give me a link to something, and when I go and actually check the link of their sources, the source is suspect. So, yeah. I don't really put a whole lot of stock in it. Almost anything is possible, but everything isn't probable. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really put a whole lot of stock in it unless you can actually present me with some evidence that something happened other than what the people who did the actual crime, they admitted to doing it. The people that set it up, they admitted to doing it. I don't know too many people that's going to take credit for something like that.
Well, this fall, we'll definitely have a show on conspiracy theories, trying to disprove those. I'm going to try to get Phil to come on the show and talk about conspiracy theories. He did a real good lecture on the goal of skepticism and how a lot of skeptics replace religion with other beliefs that don't need any verification. And you notice the conspiracy theory is the one.
Oh, yeah. That's where they go to that straight away. You know what I mean? That's the new thing, the new belief system of religion, if you will. You know, I don't know. Like I said, you got to actually present some evidence for me to buy into that. Mm-hmm.
And also, I was burning to get back on the show all summer long because of the presidential candidates, Bachman and all of the crazy people.
Oh, my man. Let me tell you something. Some of the stuff I have actually heard from these candidates here has like boggled my mind. But what boggles it even more is how there are a certain segment, a huge segment of the populace that relates to the stuff that they're saying. You know, like, really buy into it.
You know, the funny thing is, remember Perry was complaining when Obama got in office and was giving everybody aid, and he said he was giving his back, that he was ruining the country by giving out all that money?
Yeah.
Last week, he Texas asked for some aid money because of the wildfires last week.
It's real funny how nobody needs the government until they need the government. You know what I'm saying?
They were praying for rain. So, I mean, a couple weeks ago, they were praying for rain. They were doing it. they were doing it wrong, because as I understand, you're supposed to find a virgin and throw it in a volcano for rain, but they were praying and dancing, so I don't...
Well, see, I didn't know that. I thought that maybe they were supposed to pray to the Native American gods. You know, they were the ones with the praying dances, so I, you know...
Well, since they don't even do dancing anymore, I don't know if that's going to work.
Right. Well, from what I've seen, it didn't work when they said that. Or maybe it just worked the wrong way, and that's why we got Hurricane Irene. It was a little late, but it came in the form of Hurricane Irene.
I think it went real bad, because after the prayer vigil for rain, they got wildfires spreading like crazy. So I think they did the wrong prayer.
That means they did it backwards.
But just think about it. All jokes aside, in the year 2011, you're praying for rain. How primitive is that? Praying for rain. I mean... Yeah.
I don't know, man. You know, it's crazy because humans, as much as we have, like, progress, as much stuff as we have found out and enhanced our knowledge greatly, a lot of us still fall back to those old primitive ways and rituals, man. You know, it seems to me that at some point we would have abandoned that, especially after, like, for instance, I get classic example of what I'm talking about. The ancient Norsemen, they used to believe that when you had a solar eclipse, it was one of the wolf god skull. The wolf god skull was eating, literally trying to eat the sun. So they would yell and scream and try to scare the wolf god away, you know. So once the eclipse was over, they felt like they actually had some kind of control over that by doing all the yelling and trying to scare it away. But here's the thing. Once humanity found out what actually causes a solar eclipse or a lunar eclipse, there's no need for a wolf god. You know what I mean? The need for that disappears. And you would think that by now, with all the... I mean, so we still have a lot to learn. But you would think that by now, like you said in 2011, but all the stuff that we've learned now, you would think that they would have abandoned some of that crap.
Well, hand me a riot hose. I'll show. Oh, but you did mention the wolf god. I saw that on Curiosity, the episode with Stephen Hawking. Remember? Well, they showed that part where people were yelling at the solar eclipse when it was happening.
Yeah, they're yelling. You know what? It's funny because right after I saw that, you know, I play DC Universe Online. It's a video game on the PlayStation. I immediately created the wolf god as a villain.
You did?
A gamer side note.
Wow.
Yeah.
That new series, Curiosity, I'm going to have to post on that one. I think that'd be a good series. I thought Stephen Hawking would be on there more. I only saw him on there on the first episode, though.
I think that was the episode where, remember when he came out with that book? And in a book, he was saying that, you know, by us, our understanding of natural processes, there is really no reason to invoke a designer. Or what have you. I think he was like kind of, in that episode, it was kind of responding to that. You know what I mean? But how many episodes in is it?
I think it's like four. But you know the comment that everybody got mad at that he said was, when people ask me, when did God create the earth? He says, he tells them that it makes no sense because God had no time to do it because no time existed before.
You know what? He's right, though. Like, think about it. I mean, isn't the current model that we have states that at that point, time did not exist? So if no causal events could take place because there was no time, how did he decide to go and create anything? You know what I mean? Like, decide and then act as a causal event.
Well, that would go back to what Robert Ingersoll would say. You know, what would a guy be doing for eternity before he just up and one day decided to create a universe and humans? I mean,
I got the answer to that. He was playing solitaire.
Playing solitaire.
What else is there to do? There's nothing going on. This is before the strip clubs were invented. This is before cable TV. Yeah, he ain't else to do. He's playing solitaire.
Right. The whole concept is, even, I mean, I don't even go any farther than thinking past the Big Bang, because I guess we just don't know yet. I mean, you can speculate all you want, but I mean, even science is going to admit that we just don't know. It becomes a point where you have to be comfortable with saying, I don't know. I mean, there's no sense of making something up, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with that. They don't want to have to actually accept the fact that they don't know. And it's funny because they seem to come up with conclusions based on the data that the scientists that collected the data don't come up with those conclusions. So how are you coming up with those conclusions?
The Bible.
Yeah.
You know, those guys that built my computer and gave us the technology and the phone and the microphones we're talking on, they're wrong. But, you know, those sheep herders, they definitely knew what was going on back then. Yep. That's the way it worked.
They had the inside track on all of that information. You know, it's funny. It's funny because while I'm sure that in a lot of schools there are students that pray to pass, the ones of them that actually pass are the ones of them that study.
Evidence on YouTube, he made a video in his deconversion story video. He talked about how he was taking statistics and it was a real hard class for him, and he kept praying that he would pass it, and he failed it. And he said he think if he had to spend more time dedicating himself to studying instead of wishing, then he would have passed the class the first time around. You know, that's that type of wishful thinking that makes you have the dependency issue where you don't work as hard as you should have because you think something outside of yourself is going to get the job done when that's not the case at all.
True indeed. But the fallback theist argument to that. The fallback theist argument is that, well, God answers all prayers. It's just sometimes he says no. They got one for everything. they got one for everything.
Right, right, right.
Or the other fallback one is it's a great mystery. That's the other one. It's a great mystery.
It's the one Jim Jeffries, the comedian, where they said, when people ask, why does God allow tragedies to happen? And people always answer, God works in mysterious ways. And he said, what the hell is so mysterious about being a fucking asshole? Look, he said that's one of the least mysterious activities of all time.
I can tell you from personal experience, that's nothing mysterious about that for me. Like, I get it. He's being a dick. I get
what did he say? He gave the example of his girlfriend came home and he was beating up her mother. And she's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm being mysterious. I've always been mysterious.
Oh, that's too funny. That's too funny.
Jim Jeffries.
He has a YouTube channel, right?
I don't think he has a YouTube. I've seen that on. I saw that actually on one of his stand-ups.
Okay.
Someone posted on YouTube.
I'm being mysterious. I'm gonna start using that.
I've always been mysterious. Hey.
Wow.
But we're about to take a break. After we come back, we'll be speaking with our guests, Rich and Deanna Joy Lyons, about building atheist communities.
Hey guys, what's up? This is Dusty Smith, the People's Atheist, and you're listening to The Cult of Dusty, only on The Skeptic Hour. You know, I was a Christian for over 30 years, and in that 30 years, I interacted with a lot of Christians, and I got to know a lot of Christians, and I had a lot of Christian friends. And one thing I found out that pretty much all Christians have in common is that they think the Bible is really fucking boring. And there's a good reason they think the Bible is boring, because the Bible is fucking boring. You know, I felt this way when I was a Christian, and I found that most of my Christian friends felt exactly the same way. The Bible was a very long, boring book, the stories in it were boring, the language was very hard to follow and boring, and most of it is this one begat that one, that begat that one, that begat that one. And it's just the same retarded, repetitive bullshit over and over again. It's really fucking long and boring. And that's why most Christians don't read the Bible. They don't read it for the same reason that I didn't read it. You know, not one single time in the 30 years I was a Christian did I ever read the Bible from cover to cover. Now, since I've been an atheist, I've read the Bible 11 times. The Bible is much more fascinating to me now than it ever was when I was a Christian. In my experience, an atheist is much more likely to have read the Bible and to be familiar with what it actually says than a Christian is. And I guess that's probably why the atheist is an atheist to begin with. Because if you actually know what the Bible says, it pretty much pushes you to atheism because the Bible is so fucking horrible. But I understand exactly why you Christians don't read it. I mean, you already believe it's true, so there's no real reason to read the boring-ass thing. I mean, reading it isn't going to make it any more true, so why waste your time? So, in place of actually reading this boring-ass book for yourself, Many of you go to church every Sunday, and you pay somebody else to read the book for you and tell you what it says. But let me tell you something. If the preacher actually told you what the Bible said, you would stop paying him. You would stop paying him real fast if he was honest about what it said. If he pointed out to you that the Bible supports slavery and genocide and child sacrifice and torture and rape and sex slavery, you would stop paying him. You people would not pay him if he told you that, and that's why they don't tell you that. That's why they paint the Bible as all rosy. They paint God as an all-loving God who loves you. He loves everybody. That's why they pick and choose. They quote mine from the Bible. They find the stuff that makes the Bible look as good as it can possibly look, while at the same time ignoring all the horrible, terrible, bad shit in it. And they don't emphasize all the bad stuff. They downplay that shit as much as they possibly can. And really, who can blame them? They're only doing their job. They're only doing what they have to do to make a living. If they did it the other way, you would not pay them. So they're doing what they have to do to get by. And don't think for a second that the preachers don't know exactly what they're doing. Don't think that each and every one of them hasn't read the Bible from cover to cover, and each one of them doesn't understand the points that they need to hide from you. They understand perfectly what they have to tell you to get you to keep coming back every Sunday. They understand perfectly what they have to tell you to get you to keep putting money in the offering plate. Your preachers understand exactly the con job they have to pull on you to keep making money. And that's exactly why a lot of these preachers and a lot of these churches aren't even really Christians, they're just con artists. People like Ted Haggard, they've read the Bible, they understand exactly what it says. And they know it's bullshit. They know it's full of fairy tales and bullshit, and they know just how to spin it to get dumb people to give them money. They know that most of you people won't read this long, boring, hard-to-understand book yourself. A lot of these preachers know the truth, and the truth is that you people are so afraid of death that you will believe literally anything as long as they tell you that you're going to live forever. And many of you will pay handsomely to be told this fairy tale. And that's exactly why a lot of con men flock to the ministry, because they know that people will pay handsomely to be lied to, and they have no problem lying to you. They have no problem telling you what you want to hear. So Christians, I want to challenge each and every one of you. Instead of paying some other guy to read the Bible for you and tell you what it says, I challenge you to actually go out and read the Bible for yourself. Start at Genesis and go all the way through the Bible and read it. Read it for yourself, because I can assure you these con men preachers are not telling you the truth. They're lying to you about what the Bible says. The Bible actually means what it says. It doesn't mean what these con men preachers tell you it says. It doesn't mean what their interpretation of the words are. It means what it actually fucking says. So put your money where your mouth is and go read the goddamn thing yourself. And if you go read the Bible from cover to cover, and after reading all the awful, terrible, horrific shit that it actually says, if after reading all that somehow you're still a Christian, then fine. At least you'll no longer be a fucking hypocrite about it. For thecultofdusty.com, I am Dusty Smith, and as always, until next time, logic.
That was the Coat of Dusty, and we're back with our special guests, Rich and Deanna Joy Lyons. We'll be discussing building atheist communities. Hello, Rich.
Hey, how's it going today? You're sounding good.
Hello.
We're doing okay.
We're sounding all right, but you guys are sounding good.
Well, thank you very much.
And Rich, Rich was a chaplain for 12 years, as I understand.
Chaplain for 12. I was a pastor for 20, United Pentecostal Church. In the Deep South, the part of Texas that kind of looks like a neck going up, if you can just kind of visualize that, I would be from the left armpit in Deep East Texas, called Marshall, Texas. And the whole analogy works pretty well with that. So, yeah, that's where left armpit of Texas, kind of, you know, the moist,
smelly.
Yeah, only a bit for fetishists, you know?
Yeah.
Pleasant, hairy. Yeah.
That's where I was from and pastored 20 years there.
Is that the part of Texas that Rick Perry is from?
Rick is from Austin, which is about 4.5-5 hours south of Marshall, which is where I was from. So, it's interesting. I noticed you guys talking about Rick Perry. Did you know that he cut 75% of the firefighting budget this year to balance his budget.
Yes.
And you wonder why the state is burning down right now. It's because they don't have apparatus or people to fight those fires. I mean, yeah, they've got the drought thing going on and praying for rain really isn't working there. But other than that, the fact that he just gutted his ability to fight fires and thinks prayer is going to be the answer to that. That's,
you know, they never seem to realize the detriment of doing that when they're all on this cut thing until they actually have a problem. But then I guess he didn't realize it either because they tried to pray for rain instead of getting some fire trucks out there. So, I don't know.
Yeah, helicopters are a lot more effective. I mean, yeah, their answer is going to come from above, but it's going to have a whirling blade above it, not a halo on top.
All right.
I think they got hit in the face with reality when they came crawling back to the White House asking for aid. So
that's funny, though, yeah.
But the funny thing about it is, you know, they're asking for aid, and they come back to reality, but they won't do it publicly. Like, he's still on the debate. He's still talking about creationism versus evolution. And I mean, it's still things that they never say to their base, to their constituency. Oh, that prayer thing didn't work.
You know, and the whole time he's talking about, you know, the Texas miracle, how they created all these jobs. Number one, you have almost all of the nation's refining capacity and the nation's oil production capacity right there in Texas. The largest corporation in the world is ExxonMobil, which made the largest profit of any company in the world this past year, producing oil primarily in Texas. If you can't have a good economy in Texas with a oil-based society like we have right now, I mean, someone with a single-digit IQ can manage a good economy in Texas. But under Rick Perry, they've managed to trade off a lot of their upper-end tech jobs, and he's right. They have created a ton of jobs, specifically a ton of minimum wage part-time jobs that are poverty-level jobs. Right. So what he's done is traded off a bunch of good-living jobs and created a new standard for poverty, which, you know, if that's a miracle, I don't need a miracle.
Yeah, I don't want that translated throughout the rest of the country.
Yeah. And quit praying for solutions. Get off your butt and do something.
Yeah, right.
You know, if I screwed up as bad as Rick Perry had in Texas, I'd be praying, too. Well, please don't fire me.
I don't think Star of the Morning. No.
Yeah. He's praying. That's what it is.
Right. And Deanna, what's your background? Now, from listening to your podcast, I remember I was telling Rich, the very first podcast I listened to on the Living After Faith blog was Innocuous Religion.
Uh-huh.
And I believe you were saying that you were atheist or left religion long before Rich had. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. I grew up in a household where my family, you know, my mom mostly thought that she had to take us to church for us to be good. My dad, I think, would probably describe himself as an atheist if he stopped to think about religion for a moment. But, you know, he had always had a ton of, like, Asimov and Carl Sagan and stuff all on the around the house. There were always tons and tons of books. He was big into science. And so I remember being about like 9 years old or so and sitting in youth group in church and going, I don't know why I have to be here. I mean, there's no such thing as God anyways, you know, and that kind of off and on happened throughout my life. And one of my more changing religious moments was, and I think I talk about this in the episode where Candace Gorham and I, have a long conversation. I think it's a Living After Faith episode 13, something like that. Anyways, we talked about, I ended up in an evangelical Christian household when I had some family problems and ended up in the foster care system. And these people, you know, I was told, you know, you don't have to go to church with them, but they're very, you know, they're really Christian. So you're going to go live with them. They're really great people. And my first real big example of Christian hypocrisy was when they screamed at me when I wouldn't go to church with them on Sunday and threatened to send me back to the cockroach-infested crack whore house that I had been staying in previously. Whoa. Yeah, it was definitely interesting. So, you know, I only really discovered and identified with the word atheist probably within the last several years. after discovering things like skeptical podcasts, atheism-related blogs. I was like, this is what I need. This is, you know, community, basically. These are people who believe the same things I do, and they're not afraid to admit it. So I started using the label, too.
And I wasn't that bright.
The numbers on the Ebony Exodus episode was episode 26.
26,
yeah.
Yep.
That's where Candace, where we speak with Candace, or Deanna actually talks with Candace, and quite a an interesting interview.
We had a good time.
Yeah.
Right.
You'll hear words that are dirty.
You like a few words on this show. Yeah.
You know, you know, the one podcast that really caught my attention after I found out about you guys was the Too Fucked Up to Fuck.
That is one of our most popular episodes, and we debated whether we should even go into that, but a large part of the PTSD that I suffered coming out of religion, and a large part of where my life was really fucked up, had to do with sex, because of all of the sexual restrictions, all of the hyper-sex-charged atmosphere of religion, all of the rules and regulations that are based totally arbitrarily on what a bunch of sheep fuckers that were in the wilderness thought would be good. You know, I really think that's why they believed, you know, that Satan was half goat, because the guy in the next camp had a relationship with a goat. But the whole, you know, concept of religion and sexuality, without having another way to put it, it's just fucked up. So we kind of broached that subject and launched into it, and then a couple episodes later we visited it again, and it's amazing how many people have written us, called us, text, different ways that they communicate with us and say, you know, I thought I was the one who was just fucked up, and when I hear what you went through and hear how you're dealing with it, it gives me hope that I can have a normal life. We had one person contact us just recently who had just assumed he was asexual all his life because of religious hang-ups and the fear associated with sexuality. And after listening to us, after examining himself, has now become out of the closet, is bisexual, and actually is enjoying a life that involves
love.
Yeah, love and sex with people. And when you realize that that's such a large part of humans and who we are and how religion tries to control that, you understand, if I can control what a man does with his penis and what a woman does with her vagina, what else? I mean, is there anything else I have to control?
Right. That's
you
true.
Know, I control that person. And I think that that's probably consciously not on the mind of every preacher out there, but subconsciously it is a huge, powerful way to control people. And so that's what we go into on that episode, is how that worked and how we've been able to work through some really pretty big fucked up-ness.
Rich and I kind of decided, we sat and talked about this before, you know, really getting into the podcast, it's that, you know, what he's doing, telling his story and telling other people's stories, is really putting it all out there. And if you're going to expose yourself like that, I mean, you're already 9/10 of the way there. You tell the life story, you tell personal thoughts and feelings, beliefs, and, you know, everything that's happened. Why avoid sex? I mean, it is, like you said, such an important part of who we are as people. And as a control mechanism, especially, it's extremely effective. You know, imagine, if you will, this metaphor. If you grab a man by the genitals, just get a good hard handful of those honkers.
Don't do it. The Bible says you'll have to cut your hand off.
Okay, I won't do it. But if you want a man to go left, you take a hold of that and you grab him, pull him left. You want him to go right, you pull him right. Forward, back, same thing. That's what religion does, is it grabs that painful big handful of your ding dong and makes you go where it wants you to go.
It's a great analogy.
I'm pretty sure I feel pretty uncomfortable right about now. But, yeah.
Well, you should.
But just imagine how many guys are standing behind the pulpit today. There's one preacher here in town in Seattle that when I first left the church, I hadn't completely gone atheist. I was trying to find myself and not be an atheist, really. And so I moved to Seattle, and there was a church here that I went to several times. I won't mention them by name because I don't want to get you guys sued. But I went to their church, and in the four times I went there, the guy in his hour that he preached spoke more about my genitals and what I should do with them than I'd speak about them in a month. I mean, you know, it's way more important to him what I do with my genitals than it is to me. And you would think that, you know, it would be the other way around. But
that's disturbing.
It is. The whole time I was thinking, man, this guy is really, really, really into my junk. And even when I was a preacher, I didn't, you know, it wasn't something that I really, I mean, yeah, we had our rules and things, but it was not the focus of every time I walked up to the microphone, say, okay, grab your microphone while I grab mine. You know.
Preachers like that, well, they're going to pull a Ted Haggard real soon now. Yeah, you know, really. You just count down until he gets caught with the meth and the prostitutes and, you know.
So much for building atheist communities.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
I guess I should let up on the squeezing genitals talk here.
Well, you know, there is a show on BBS Radio with a lady, and she talks a lot about those. You might want to call back.
I'll call her.
Well, anyway. What we're doing in trying to build atheist community, Thomas and I discussed it yesterday, is the whole concept of church is pretty messed up. But there are some things with church that are not so messed up. They do a lot of community. They have a lot of support for people. And because they have that support, people are not going to leave that entire family and world of support just to step off and say, okay, you've proven to me that, you know, the Bible is wrong. You've convinced me God doesn't exist. So, yeah, I'll just leave the entire life I've known forever. I'll leave all the traditions of my family. I'll leave an entire lifestyle, sometimes leaving your family because they don't agree with the whole idea. So I'll just leave everything in life, and just because you've proven to me that this guy Darwin had some good ideas. Right, people aren't going to do that. So what we have to do to give people a place that they can come out as an atheist and be an atheist and be intellectually honest with themselves is develop a community, much like in some ways like what churches do, that gives them somewhere to land. And what I mean by community, I'm not talking about, you know, little communes where, you know, everybody lives south of Ballard and we're in a little, you know, commune. But what I'm talking about there is a connection between people where when someone gets married, there's an officiant. There is someone to do the ceremony. When someone dies, there is that network of support that helps with the grieving and helps that person adjust with their loss and
brings them casseroles.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Feeds the family, takes care of the things, much in the way that the church does. When Deanna was recently in the hospital, we realized there's no such thing in Washington State as humanist chaplains. So there was no chaplain to visit. And I used to be a chaplain 12 years. I know what chaplains do. They do a whole lot more than just lay hands on people, or as we used to say, they do a whole lot more than lay people. The chaplains, you know, they know where the heated blankets are. They know when you've got a question, they know who to go to get that answer if they don't know the answer themselves. There's so much more that they do as a liaison for the patient than just the praying thing. And we didn't have that because we don't believe and that particular person's dogma. Well, as the humanist and atheist community, I believe it's time for us to start developing that, to start developing those different areas where, you know, and right now is a great time. We have meetup.com. We have all these social networking tools. You know, the Bible is a powerful thing, and it's bullshit, but bullshit can be pretty powerful. And it gives them a focal point that they build their community upon. And we as atheists, because we don't believe in God, really don't have that focal point. But what we do right now, see, the Bible gives them license to manipulate people and control people and promise them things that isn't true and all this kind of stuff. And you can really grab a hold of people with that. But as an atheist community, what we have is science. What we have is logic. What we have is things that can make a better humanity based not on promises and pie in the sky, but based on studies and science and ways that we can improve humanity. You know, we can develop vaccines and get those vaccines to more people and eliminate diseases. Religion can't do that. You can't pray the disease away. We can, so many areas where advances, and not just scientifically, but I think where we need to go now is socially. When you look at socially, you know, technologically, we are eons ahead of where they were in the Bible. Back in Bible days, there were, you know, what was their main top line of transportation was some kind of buggy pulled by some kind of animal.
Right.
And now you look, we've got the space shuttle. We have space stations. We, you know, can send probes to Mars. I mean, technologically, you can't even compare. But you look socially, we're in the same place they were back then. You hate people that aren't like you. You gather your own little people together and fight the ones that are different from you. You know, it's exactly socially where we were back then. So it's time for us as a species, I think, to develop socially. And there's nothing better than the skeptic humanist community to bring that about.
Yeah, you know, a big part of our community right now is online. And I would love to be able to bring that into meet space, as it were, you know, and some groups are definitely doing that. You know, meetup.com, like Rich mentioned, has 8 bazillion skeptic and atheist meetup groups, places where people, you know, don't just develop their relationships with each other online, but they go do things together offline. They have pub hours and talks by people, you know, experts like Greta Christina come and do a presentation for the group. Just recently, Seattle Atheists did a river rafting trip where they all got inner tubes, you know, and they went floating down the river, that kind of stuff. And those are the kind of things that churches normally do. You know, you go to church and somebody comes and speaks, or you go with the church ski group, or you go with the church youth group, you have a picnic, whatever. And that stuff is starting to happen. There's also a lot of groups like xchristian.net, which is, you know, all about providing support to people who are leaving Christianity. And I've no doubt that there are people on there who know each other in real life, because it's such a big online board. So many people can go, oh my gosh, you're in Seattle too? Great, let's get together and have a beer. There's projects like Vicki Garrison's Take Heart Project. She runs the NoLongerQuivering.com blog, which is about, you know, ex-women from the patriarchal quiverful movements. And the Take Heart Project, she's assembling information for people who are leaving, things like, you know, psychological information, so these people can give that information to their friends and family, to their psychiatrists or their therapists. You know, so there really is like a storehouse of all that information to kind of help people leave. And that's what we're trying to do with Living After Faith, is, you know, just by telling our stories and all of the people who we interview stories, we end up making people feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. There are people like me. They've been through what I've been through. And even that little bit helps. But, you know, we're also able to extend that help to more real life situations. We recently got an email from someone who, I can't remember where he lives, but he wants to move to the Seattle area. Yeah. And he was asking us, you know, do you have any ideas, like, you know, how I can find someone to rent a room from, or, you know, I don't have very good credit. So, you know, if you know how to find, you know, housing or apartments that would rent to me. And he's in the closet about his non-belief, so he has to keep it on the down low. And we, you know, we started recommending and telling him our experiences renting and got in touch with some friends. That's the kind of real life help that we atheists can give to each other. And, you know, we are creating community little by little. I think the next step, though, a big ass building.
Well, Uh-oh.
I think I was talking to Rich yesterday and telling him a lot of those things we definitely need, but the greatest asset in the atheist community is the one that kills us the most. It's our atheists are like herding cats. You know, we don't want to be followers or group together with everyone. We kind of scatter and do our own thing, but we have to find a point, something common to come together on, like religion does, and have the same outlets where people can be comfortable to come out, where they know to be another support system.
Where I think that's going to come from, you're right. See, the Bible is that thing that Christianity, the Quran is that thing that Islam can gather around and say, this is our common thing. It's awfully hard to do that when the only common thing we have is that we don't believe something. But what we can do is focus on some things that we as humanists do believe. I believe in humanity. I believe that there is no God to help humanity, so humanity has to help humanity. So I believe that we can build on the concept that we understand that as humans, we're going to have needs. I also understand that as a human, you're going to have needs. So the only way that logically I can expect to have help when I have needs that I can't accomplish myself is if I'm willing to invest and help others when they have needs that they can't meet in themselves. So what it is, it's simple logic. It's simple understanding of what humanity is, and not everybody has to be involved in everything. For instance, you've got your Dawkins and Harris and Hitchens and Dennett and tons of authors out there providing tons of great counter-apologetics, great stuff like that. That needs to be done. But it'd be pretty foolish for me to jump into counter-apologetics at this point, as good as they are. And you know, how would I even begin to speak on evolution on a level with Dawkins? I mean, I struggle to understand what he's got in his books, you know? So I couldn't have that conversation. But I am involved in, or have been involved in, the Christian social end of things for a long time, so that's where I should go. So you do need the counter-apologetics people. You do need the people out there, you know, who are suing all the little schools who insist on having prayer before football games and stuff like that. They need to be sued. They need to be made to follow the laws of the land. They don't get the privilege of being able to say, you know, freedom of religion as long as it's mine, you know. So, you know, there is a branch that needs to do, and FFRF and American Atheists, they're doing a great job with that. They are fighting that fight and doing a great job of it. So what I foresee is people playing a bigger role in the area that fits them the most. And I think the area that when we talked to David
Silverman?
Yeah, I lose names. When we talked to David Silverman on our podcast, he said that he believes that the biggest group of atheists is not the activists. It's not people who are out. It's people who are still on church pews, you know. And if we're going to be able to get those people to be comfortable to be the atheists that they really are, there's going to have to be social development that takes place as well. So I think as a movement, we're doing a great job in a lot of areas, but there's some areas that we can really step up and raise things to another level.
I agree. I definitely agree with that.
Yep. Well, we're about to take a quick break. You're listening to the Skeptic Hour.
Hey, yo, this is your favorite atheist rapper, Sickness, and you're listening to the Skeptic Hour.
In the endless reaches of the universe, there once existed a planet known as Krypton, a planet that burned like a green star in the distant heavens. There, civilization was far advanced and had brought forth a race of supermen whose mental and physical powers were developed to the absolute peak of human perfection.
The world is doomed, it's doomed, too much almost out of room. Mushroom, watch it bloom, watch it go boom, boom. I'm like Tesla, I'll shock you, watch a complacent gesture, yeah. But your heart can take the pressure like Brett the Hitman, the wrestler. I'm the professor, just cause I profess to be Escher, the sketch of regret. Eat you like Hannibal, the cannibal, and I hack it, you betcha, you better bet that I'll get you. How'd I set you before I let you get spread? I'm the stretcher, tell myself I'm Osama, sick, they're never gonna get you. Hope these lyrics on this bullet in your head will infect you. I'm the bad guy, the jester, cause in jest I contest you. Most cherished belief police. That's why they say my songs are molestia. I hit a bigot with a big hit. You get it, I dig it, I spit it like a fucking kid in the confessional. Get it, he took his erection and bit it. You betcha he did it. Forget the other half, father up in heaven, you'll get it.
I'm a man, I'm a human being. All I do is breed and boo and things. I'm a bad man. How could lose the streets, blue of things. This world is doomed, it seems. Cause I'm a man, I'm a human being. All I do is breed and ruin things. I'm a bad man, this world is doomed, it seems. I'm dying as a music.
Yes, I'm about to polish off all your, your holocaust. All your holla mazel tov. Wanna shower, gotta wash. Fucking fatty waddle off. Waffle House, lot of cost. Lot of starving kids on this earth, and we want them off.
Want a Walmart on your block? Yeah. Pray you're higher than your boss.
Fucking mom and papa shops, I bought the lots for half the cost. Fucking diamonds, wanna watch? Watch it bling, watch it watch. I walked up to the African, miners handing chops it off. Are you proud to be human? Are you proud to be stupid? Are you proud to shout out loud that you doubt evolution? The world was made for you. Don't think about what you're doing, about what you ruin, polluting, or about what you're losing. The sky was blue, and now you turned it into a new one, a brown one with black clouds, perfume of pollution. What we're pursuing, it's an illusion. Keep building, keep using, keep growing, and keep on consuming, cause we are human.
I'm a man, I'm a human being. All I do is breed and ruin things. I'm a bad man, I pollute the streets, blue of things. This world is doomed, it seems, cause
I'm a man.
I'm a human being. All I do is breed and ruin things. I'm a bad man. This world is doomed, it seems. Dying as the music scene.
He plans to strike tonight. Beware, you fools. My electromagnesia ray strikes tonight at 12. Total destruction will come to those who laughed at me and failed to heed my warning.
Stop me. Beat by catalyst called antagonist. Watch me tackle this spectacular rap. I can't fathom how miraculous this package is. Fabulous like a faggot is attacking this ravenously. Handcuff us to Shaquille O'Neal. You still couldn't shackle us. Look at me. I'm bragging while the planet collapses. While the pack's still in my brain dances on my synapses. You're about to take your fucking cash and shove it right up your asses. And rap to you while I do it like you're fighting with Cassius. Muhammad Ali, I drop them rounds on your asses. I'm tech, nine with a masses. You know you like me, you bastard. The world's on fire, we've ignited the matches. When everything is gone, we'll probably fight over ashes. I'll revile the masses, quick to hire the fascists. Like, let's see who can pile the bodies higher the fastest. Ignore time as it passes, but when you look back, your memories will be painted black like blind color glasses. Blind color
I'm a man, I'm a man, I'm a human being. All I do is breed and ruin things. I'm a bad man, I pollute the streets, blue of things. This world is doomed, it seems, cause
I'm a man.
I'm a human being. All I do is breed and ruin things. I'm a bad man. This world is doomed, it seems. Dying as the music scene.
True to his threat, the mad Zionist, who's warning to build the city in a grip of terror, went on his rampage of destruction on the stroke of midnight. The deadly impact of his mysterious rain smashed the famous Tower Bridge, hurling cars and pedestrians into the river below. The police have warned everyone to remain in their homes.
You're listening to the Skeptic Hour. We have special guests Rich and Deanna Joy Lyons with us, the show discussing building atheist communities. And also, I want to ask, since you guys are in Seattle, that's a big place for free thinkers. What type of programs do you guys see in Seattle that other places around can start to put together themselves?
Well, there are a lot of groups here that are, atheism and skepticism based. So that is a fantastic place, of course, for community. We have groups like the Humanists of Washington. They've been around forever. Seattle Atheists and Tacoma Atheists have their own groups, as well as the Eastside Atheists and Agnostics. Auburn Free Thinkers Society. All of these just within, 20, 30 miles of Seattle. I'm sure there's some I'm forgetting. And, that, of course, is a big place to start. Some of them are just, social meetup groups, and some of them are, actual whole nonprofit organizations. And, I think a lot of people, they go, God, I want to go to, I want a group of people. I want a meetup full of skeptics and atheists. And how do I find that? And they look around and they don't see one. And they miss the very obvious conclusion. You can start one.
Yeah.
You know, it's something like $19 a month to have a meetup group, cheaper if you pay for a few months at a time. You can ask your members once you have them to, you know, chip in a fiver here and there. And, you know, schedule social hours, find speakers. A lot of people will come and just do this for free. Yeah. Seattle Skeptics, I know, doesn't really have a budget. And they have people like Ben Radford came and spoke with them. I think they chipped in for airfare, possibly, and hotel. But, you know, things like that. It's so easy to just suggest something. Or, you know, with a recent, we were sitting around talking with people about, you know, they said, well, you know, I want to go to these meetups, but, you know, I can't go to the bar with kids, or I, you know, can't do it on a weeknight, or I can't do it on a weekend. And, you know, everybody's talking about scheduling and how, you know, oh, I can't afford to do this. And, you know, the suggestion is so easy to make. You just send a note to the organizers and go, hey, I want to meet up with people at this place and let's try for this time. And they'll schedule it for you and you can all just show up. You know, it's not such a formalized thing to gather a group of people together now. It's very easy to just throw something up on the web, get a Facebook event together, whatever, and everybody can have that community.
You know, one thing that just an example of how you can do it, a good friend of ours, Scott, hosts a meetup at the Blood Bank, and he is probably given more gallons of blood than a human ought to be allowed. I mean, he has never missed a chance to give blood, but he encourages other people to do it. And here you've got all these atheists who are giving blood. You say, well, what does that have to do with atheism? Absolutely nothing, and that's why it's so beautiful. Because we don't have to be everything centered on the fact that we're atheists. We have lives. And giving blood is something that helps everyone, helps the whole society. So when the blood banks are running short and having, you know, that critical time when they need blood, who they call? They call this atheist guy and say, can you get any of your people to come in and give blood? I mean, that just in a very non-confrontational, just openly giving to society automatically raises the view of atheism, because here you've got this atheist guy that if we pick up the phone and call him, he can get some people in here and we can save some lives. So just a simple idea of what turns you on. What is your thrill? And here in Seattle, we have a lot of things. There's movie night in the Lion's Den one night a month where your price of admission is to bring yourself. And you come and we're going to watch a movie of some sort and have just good conversation and probably chips and dip. But, you know, it's so simple, and yet that gives an outlet for people to do things. I went through a situation a couple of years ago now, maybe three, where someone in my apartment had made meth, and all of my belongings became trash. I mean, everything was contaminated. It made me sick. I had burns on my skin from the chemicals and stuff. It was a bad situation. And when I got rid of everything, I lost everything, got me a new apartment. I'm literally in an empty room, and a friend of mine who had met through the atheist community called me up and said, hey, let's have coffee. We hadn't talked in a while, so met her at a coffee shop, and in the course of the conversation, told her what had happened, and she takes me through her house and gives me a table. This table that I just banged on is the table that she gave me. It's in the closet now because it folds up and makes a nice small table, but it also folds out. It's a great table. So, I mean, she gave me a table. She gave me chairs. She gave me washcloths and towels and even a bar of hand-milled soap. I mean, stuff that you need, but at that point, and, you know, it wasn't some Christian outreach. It was just an atheist friend of mine. And that's the kind of supporting community I'm talking about. When someone in the community, in the Christian community, needs help, the Christian community comes around. And we are beginning to see that in Seattle. And as we develop that in other areas, it'll begin to grow in those places, too. In East Texas, where I'm from, that you couldn't even hope for a minute that that would ever happen, that you would have, I mean, they run you out if they hear you're an atheist, sometimes literally. But as atheist community begins to build and we have a landing place for these people, a place where it is safe,
to discuss what you're doing. You'll see more of those things grow, especially in those communities.
Oh, and darling, tell them about when someone died when you were in the church and you had the whole mobile food.
That was one of our best outreaches. We had two of those big, giant, huge Coleman ice chests. We had a cart that had plates and knives and forks and spoons and everything you could think of. We had two commercial coffee brewers, the big bun coffee brewers. We had this entire kit. And when we heard that someone lost a loved one in our Christian community, within an hour, we could roll that out. And by the end of the day, have more food than a family could eat just by making a couple of phone calls and people pitching in. You know, that kind of thing might have been a bit of overkill, but at the same time, the family didn't have to worry about anything. Their needs were met. We had people there to watch the kids. All they had to do is focus on their grief and doing the essentials they had to do at that time of need. And it's not that hard to do that. We could make that happen in the atheist community just as well.
Right. Right. Well, we have 5 minutes left in the show. Before you guys go, can you tell everyone how to reach you if they want to talk to you about meetups or tell them your website address so they can listen to some of your podcasts?
Sure. Livingafterfaith.com is our website, and all of our episodes are there. You can subscribe to us through iTunes, through RSS.
Through Zune.
Through Zune. I'm talking way over my head because I don't know what these things are. Deanna's the brains of the operation.
We're on Twitter at Laugh With Me, L-A-F With Me. That's the abbreviation for Living After Faith is to laugh. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/livingafterfaith. We tried to kind of make it all homogenous. We're available. We have a voicemail line now actually on our website. You can use a Google widget to call us, or you can call us with a normal phone and leave us messages. And we have email addresses.
Yeah, our number is 252-325-9667.
Yeah, that's 252-32-LIONS.
Yes.
We wanted it to spell out.
That's catchy. Yeah. I was listening to the podcast yesterday, and I noticed the Come Laugh With Us. I was like, we don't even have a slogan. I tried a couple. Like, come question with us. No, that's cool.
We'll figure something out. Right? We'll figure something out.
Well, there's nothing wrong with corny. I think we've got a pretty healthy dose of corny.
I think Come Laugh With Me is pretty corny. But Living After Faith, we want it to be the emphasis of what we do is really on living, not on the after faith. I mean, yeah, the faith thing kind of raped us. The faith thing kind of messed us up pretty bad. But you can come through and you can reach a place that you're no longer being abused by a situation. And you can have your own personal recovery so that life is good again. And our life is good. Life is not perfect. No one's life is. But when you're addressing your issues, you approach them directly and in a healing manner, life can get better. And that's really what we try to tell people is your life can get better than it is, and it will get better.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, you've been listening to The Skeptic Hour. Until next time, question everything.
You can't avoid them. You can't ignore them. With every generation, it will spread the poison. The finger pointing and false anointing. The people choosing when everybody joins them.
Who are you carrying all over this for? God? Is that it? God? Well, I tell you, let me give you a little inside information about